What is up, and welcome back to another episode of the Wizards Podcast. I'm your host, Greg Finberg. It's been a minute. I think the last one we recorded was a week ago. In that week, I don't know if you follow me on Twitter, but I got my wisdom teeth out. So I was out of commission for a couple of days, just kind of re resting and eating pretty soft foods. It wasn't that fun, I can't lie, but I'm back. And I'm back in time to, crack out a fun episode where I get to talk about how the Wizards have lost 16 games in a row, tying a franchise record. Just kind of talk about how absolutely terrible this team has been over the last month or so. And yeah, we'll dive right into a few topics. I want to talk about some positives because obviously that's what I try to do on this pod. It's when you're doing a Wizards podcast, you got to know coming in, you're going to talk about a lot of negatives. So you're going to have to put a positive spin on stuff if you're going to keep things fresh and fun throughout the season when it's usually boring and dull and filled with losing. So we're going to talk about some good things, but we're also going to talk about some bad things because that's all you can do when the team's losing 16 in a row. One of the main things that I want to talk about throughout not only this losing streak, but about throughout the season is the Jordan Poole, Tyus Jones backcourt and how bad it's been. They started the year starting Poole next to Tyus all throughout the first part of the season. That shit didn't work. There were no defensive rotations. The individual on-ball defense from the backcourt was absolutely terrible. The guards would get past those guys, filtered into Gafford, and then Gafford would kind of do his job sometimes and swat some shots away, protect the rim. But when that happens all season, you get worn down, you get tired. And towards the end, before we traded him, everything at the rim was going in or getting fouled. They can't play defense as a backcourt. We knew that going in. And then you take a look at their offensive production, and you're like, okay, not bad. But when they're apart, it's night and day. I mean, Jordan Poole coming off the bench, filling in for Tyus as the kind of backup point guard role, has been phenomenal. He's averaging 23 points off the bench since the All-Star break, and we'll talk about Poole later in the episode. But with Tyus Jones and Jordan Poole on the court together, the Wizards are absolutely terrible. No defensive resistance, just bad team basketball. It doesn't work. But when Jordan Poole comes off the bench by himself, when Tyus Jones is playing, as that sole guard by himself alongside, a Shamit or a Koulibaly, the team also plays very well. But when you decide that you want to play them at the same time, it's terrible. And look, Brian Keefe, I applaud you for the fact that you decided that playing them together wasn't going to work, obviously. But just because you don't start them together doesn't mean like you have to play them together at the end of games or you have to play them together at other points. No. Stop playing the Jordan Poole, Tyus Jones backcourt. It is awful. It has been terrible all season. And the fact that they made a step in the right direction, moving Poole off the bench, you're able to see that backcourt is so much better when their minutes are separated. And for Brian Keefe to continuously go back to that backcourt is just it's beyond me. I don't get it. I really don't. It makes no sense. And look, he keeps doing it and he's got to sit here and just kind of be like, what the fuck are you doing? And I've kind of soured on Brian Keefe lately and I'll also talk about later in the episode, but I want to talk about that backcourt. It's bad. We need to stop it. Tyus Jones might be back next season, which would obviously it would make sense for not trading him at the deadline like we should have for a multiple second round picks. But if that's the case, are you going to just say Jordan Poole's a six man now and he's not going to be your starting two guard and you're going to start Bilal? What are you going to do? I don't know, but if Tyus Jones is back, I don't want him starting next to Poole. I don't want Poole starting next to Jones. They're not good together. And we've seen that, and we need to stop trying it out because it's not going to work. I also next want to talk briefly about the clutch time Wizards, maybe the worst clutch time basketball team of all time. If the Wizards had one guy that they could rely on down the stretch, I think they'd probably be like 15 wins, 15, 16 wins this season. There are games, against the Suns and Phoenix that you blew. Obviously, the blown leads with Woj against the Hornets. Against the Raptors, the one we saw against the Lakers, against the Jazz. Like, there's so many games that the Wizards were in down the stretch that they 100% should have won, and they didn't close out the games. And that's in part because they don't have a true number one option. But it's also in part because they have number two and number three options that think they're fucking Kobe Bryant when the game's on the line, and they're not. And they're gonna have to realize that, because when Kyle Kuzma gets the ball, he literally fucking 20 seconds on the clock, Wizards down two. Kuz goes, "Give me the ball, clear out. I'm Kobe. Nobody's as good as me. This is my time. This is my moment." He calls his own number. He's not good enough to do that right now. He's not that guy. But he thinks he is, because it's his team and he's one of the highest paid players on the team, and he's supposed to be a leader as one of the older dudes on this team. Fuck no. You're not good enough. And we think he is, and that's why we're so bad, because we're trusting number two, honestly, two number three options as our number one options. And when the going gets tough, when the game's on the line, when you need that big shot, they aren't at that spot in their careers where they're going to say, "All right, give me the ball. I'm taking over and I'm carrying this team to victory." They are not capable. Kuzma, Poole, two guys I'm talking about, they're not capable of doing that yet. I mean, we saw down the stretch in LA, Jordan Poole couldn't miss. He was phenomenal against the Lakers in LA. But at the end of the game is tied. And you decide that I'm going to go down and turn the ball over. They come down. Austin Reaves makes the layup to tie the game. And then what are we doing with that bullshit shot at the end? I literally tweeted out, this is going to be a horrible last second contested three pointer. You can't tell me otherwise, and we're gonna go to overtime, because this team needs like that glory moment. These two guys, they need to have that moment for themselves. Jordan Poole takes a contested fadeaway three pointer at the buzzer, doesn't even hit the fucking rim. Horrible shot selection. Just drive and kick. Get in the paint. The game is tied. A two wins it, a three wins it. Why are you taking a three? Makes zero sense. And then you go into overtime. In the beginning of overtime, Kuz makes a couple good shots, and then everything stalls out. Down the stretch, we couldn't score. And then, of course, down three, need a bucket. Kyle Kuzma says, "All right, 15 seconds on the shot clock." You know where this is going. Takes a horrible contested three, not even close. And we lose the game. It's the same shit. These guys think that they're fucking MJ and Kobe, and they're not. We just get a good shot. We need a three. I'd much rather have Corey Kispert taking the three at the end of the game than Kyle Kuzma. I'm sorry. I would. Corey Kispert is a great three-point shooter. And if you get it to Corey, he's probably open because you've driven and you kicked it out to Corey wide open, instead of trying to create your own shot in isolation, and you're contested and you're not going to get a good shot. The late game execution, it's been bad under it was bad under Wes all season, and it's been really bad under Brian Keith. It's the fact not only that we're not calling good plays, we're not creating action, we're literally saying, "Who's cool, take the ball and ISO." I could fucking call that in the huddle. What are you paying Brian Keith for? Let me coach. I could sit there in the huddle on my fucking play my little whiteboard and say, "Kuz, here you are, number 33. Daddy, you're gonna pass the ball into him, and everyone, guess what? We're gonna go to the corner, and then we're gonna let Kyle Kuzma dribble out the clock and take a contested three. That's the shot I want, and I think it's gonna work." That's what you're fucking paying this guy to do as your interim coach? No, fuck that. Draw up a play. Draw up some action. Why are we doing this consistently at the end of games? Is it because we're incapable as a coaching staff of drawing up a great play? Is it because we do as a coaching staff draw up a play, but our guys Jordan and Kyle shrug that off because they want the moment? I don't know what it is, but it's got to change, because the late game execution is terrible. The hero ball at the end of games is terrible. It's been happening all season, and we don't have the roster, the facilities to do that now. Like, our team is terrible. Our roster is the worst in the league. You don't have the facilities to say, "Here, I'm giving it to you, and you're our guy. Go get a bucket." You gotta get a bucket by making the right play when your team is this bad, and we don't do that. We think we got MJ and Kobe at the two and the four. What are we doing? Get good shots at the end of games. If you do, you might have two, three, four more wins. But yeah, that's just I had to touch on that because it's been pissing me off all season. Those guys just trying to get their moment in and hit that buzzer beater because it's their team. Fucking move the ball at the end of the game. I don't know, like, it's not that difficult. Let other guys, get the best shot. LeBron James does a great job of it. They always double LeBron at the end of games. He gives it to the right guy, make or miss, he'll live with it. Jordan Poole, Kyle Kuzma, they want the shot, and they're not passing that shit for no one. That shit can't happen. You're not good enough. I want to talk about RJ Hampton real quick. We just signed him to a 10-day contract a couple of days ago. Former first-round pick in the 2020 draft for, I think it was from Denver. Played a season there, I think. Kind of moved around the league a little bit. But look, he got traded to the Go-Go about 2 weeks ago. He dropped, I think, 15 on 5 of 5 from 3, one of the games. He just dropped 30 points off the bench on 5 of 6 from 3, 9 of 13 from the field, 7 rebounds. Like, he's a guard that I think still has, some potential and some ability to play. So on that 10-day contract, I mean, look, what happens a lot with the Wizards in these 10 days is they sign to a 10-day, they sit on the bench for the Wizards, don't play, and then they're back down to the go-go. All the two-way spots are full. So I honestly doubt that he, gets any time in the NBA. But definitely an intriguing prospect. Has had a couple of good games. Same with Champagne as well, who just signed a two-way deal. I like to see both of them get some run. I mean, we kind of know what Landry Shamet can do. I don't know about you, but I would prefer to see those guys get some run over him. It won't happen, but I wanted to touch on RJ. Quick segment, but I think he's been playing well, and I'd like to see him get some run in the NBA. And that kind of leads me to, I want to talk about Poole specifically for just a second, because look, he had a really rough beginning of the season. Nobody's denying that. He didn't deny it either. It's the reason that he got moved to the bench. But post All-Star break, since coming off the bench, he's averaging 23.8 points per game, 4 assists, 3 rebounds, shooting nearly 50% from the field at 47%. He's getting more efficient. He's making the tough shots that he used to make in Golden State. He's making efficient shots like we want him to, taking good shots, not forcing too many things. And he has, obviously, he has those moments where he gets over his head, he over dribbles, he'll force up, sidestep threes. And when they go in, you're like, wow, this guy has a lot of talent. He's really skilled. But when they don't go in, you sit there and say, well, what the fuck are you doing? That's a terrible shot. And that's just kind of the player that you got here, and you're gonna have to live with. You're kind of an erratic player that when he makes the shots and he's on, he's pretty unstoppable. But when he's not, it looks really bad. It's detrimental to the team and to the success of the team. So I just want to touch on the fact that a lot of people threw that guy under the bus and said he's terrible. We're absolutely done with him. We're out. He won't recover. Trade him for a bag of rocks. This is why you hold on to guys like Jordan Poole. Trading him wouldn't do you any good. You would get maybe a second round pick, maybe a player to match salaries. That doesn't help you. With Jordan Poole, he's got 3 more years on his deal. Just stay the course. You never know what he can bring to you. And when you're going to be this bad, when you're going to be the worst team in the league, it doesn't hurt you. Like, I don't care that I'm paying him $30 million per year over the next 4 years. I'm not paying anybody else money. We're not going to be good. If Jordan Poole can develop, he's only 24. Look what you got on your hands. You have a guy that would just be hitting his prime in around 27, 28 when you are also hitting your stride in terms of this rebuild. You can have him under contract. By that time, maybe he signs an extension. Just be patient with this guy. The scoring volume and the dribble moves and the skill and the flashiness, that's always been there. The efficiency, the IQ at point guard, the decision making. That's what has to come. And that's come the last couple of games since coming off the bench. And hopefully that starts to develop to where he can, start and play, a bigger role. And I want to mention, he's coming off the bench, but he's closing games. He's still playing a starter role, still playing 35 to 40 minutes a game. The only difference is that he's not, out there to begin the game. And look, I commend him for this because, he had a lot of people, trashing him all season, saying he was, not good. And I'm not gonna include myself in the trashing because I like to say I don't trash players. I never come at them personally. But obviously you have to call out when players aren't playing well. You gotta be fair. And I called it out multiple times. I said, look, Jordan Poole was not playing good. Jordan Poole was brought in here to be a much better player, a much more efficient player. and he's been terrible up to this point of the season. I said at the All-Star break, and that was true. It's not like it was incorrect. If you're a Jordan Poole stan, you can't sit there and disagree with the assessment I made that Jordan Poole has not played up to the way he should have. Jordan Poole would probably agree with me as well. But you're also allowed to sit back here and, commend the positives. And that's what I'm doing here now. Jordan Poole has been phenomenal. In that Utah game, he was terrific. Down the stretch is a different story. I touched on that earlier with him and Kuz. It's got to be better. But he was 8 of 9 in the first half. He didn't miss. He scored nearly 30. That's the Jordan Poole that this team acquired, and that's the one that they're gonna need, going forward if if he wants to be an integral part of this rebuild process. So yeah, I just wanted to touch on Jordan because, I felt like he needed a couple minute segment in this pod to just kind of appreciate how good he's been. Great against the Lakers, great against the Jazz. He had another good game last night against Orlando. So just wanted to commend him for that good stretch of play. And look, at this point, the Wizards sit at 9-53, losing streak of 16 games. Obviously, from an outsider's perspective, you sit here and say, holy shit, this team is terrible. How do you keep watching this team? What are they even doing? How do you lose that many games in a row? How are you 9-53? I mean, these questions, if you had watched all season, if you watched all 62 games like me, and I'm sure a lot of the listeners have, they're not hard questions to answer. Just, literally watch a game or two, see the dysfunction around this team, see how they intentionally lose games, intentionally, blow leads at the end. I mean, they were up, what, 10 points, I think, at one point on the Lakers. Nobody thought they were going to win that game. They were up, what, 21 points in Utah. Well, fuck no. 17-0 Jazz run. They retake the lead, and then they end up winning by 12. Up by 21 against Orlando. Nobody thought they were going to win that game. I tweeted out, is anybody even surprised when they blew the lead? And nobody was. 21-point lead gone. Fourth quarter collapse. They lose. It's the same shit all season. They don't have that guy in the clutch to bring them back like every other team does. And they don't. They seem to not have that chemistry to kind of come together as a group and hold off these rallies and these late game comebacks by these teams. They don't. They kind of fold. And that's on the coaching staff of Brian Keefe for not adjusting to the adjustment. But it's also on the players for not having any counters to some of these defensive adjustments. But look, at the end of the day, that's 16 straight games they've lost. You talk about bad. This is all time generationally, historically bad. The record, the previous record for losses in a season was 16. So the Wizards, for the Wizards at least, was 16 in a row, set by the 09, 10 Wizards, with John. So, it's a historically bad season for the Wiz. Look, if they don't beat Charlotte, to end the losing streak on, I think, Friday night, they don't beat Charlotte at home, they're in some serious trouble in terms of that losing streak getting to 28 games and the streak being broken against the Pistons. Which obviously, if they get to 28, 29 games in the long run, that's good because, it secures them the worst record. They won't be able to fall farther than 5 in the lottery, based on that record. So it would all help in the end, but it's gross. It's organizational malpractice. It sucks not only for the players, but for the fans. Like, you really want me to keep watching games. You really want me to keep paying you money to see you lose every single game. It creates losing habits. It's not good for the camaraderie of the team, the morale of the team. You never want to lose that many games in a row. I don't care if you're tanking. You don't want to lose that many games in a row. It's pathetic. It's a bad look for your organization. And so I hope that it doesn't get to that point. Winning one game is not going to fucking kill your season. Newsflash, you're pretty fucking bad. The Spurs aren't they're terrible, but they're not as bad as you. I think they have 13 wins, and then the Blazers and the Hornets have about 15, 16 each. So you're not catching them. You might not even win a game the rest of the season. So one game, one win against the Hornets wouldn't hurt to lose this streak. Once you lose it, you can lose, 20 in a row. I don't care. Just, don't get to that Pistons streak. Don't be that bad. Yeah, I mean the losing streak's terrible. And I also want to touch on this. And look, I wanted to tweet this out, but I didn't, out of respect for some of the people that I know that work there, and I know they're great people. And I don't want to create enemies. So I figured, this is the exclusive type of content that you'll get just from listening to my pod as opposed to being a, regular follower of my Twitter. You'll get a little more, of my opinion, a little more opinionated Wizards coverage from me. But look, I saw this and I didn't want to talk about it, but I have to make a comment on it. The propaganda from Monumental after some of these games is just borderline disgusting. The fact that they think they can trick fans, grown ass men and women into thinking that this team isn't as bad as it is just because you don't talk about it ever. Like, what the fuck is that? I don't usually watch the post game shows because I'm not local. I don't live in the DMV, so I watch on League Pass, and then occasionally the League Pass coverage will move into the local coverage, and I'll get to watch the post game. But usually, I'm so done with the Wizards after watching them for 2.5 hours that the game gets turned off immediately. I go do something fun because I haven't been able to do anything fun the last 2.5 hours. But I was watching on the post game show after the Utah game. Keep in mind a game where the team led by 20 points gave up 3 plus 11 nothing or more runs to Utah, including a 17 nothing run in the second quarter. Blew that 20-point lead. We're down one entering the fourth quarter. Complete collapse. Lose by 12 for their 15th straight loss. One loss away from tying a franchise worst with 16 straight losses. You want to know what the three main talking points were on the Wizards post-game show after their 15 straight loss, a loss in which they blew a 20-point lead and collapsed in the fourth quarter? It was Kyle Kuzma scoring 32 points and how well he played. It was Jordan Poole and Tyus Jones playing very well, which they haven't together. And then it was Deni Avdija's consistency all night, despite a game in which he turned the ball over 5 times. What the fuck are we doing? Seriously, what are we doing? Do you really think that not only by, they didn't name the record of the Wizards, not once was the record displayed on, on the TV screen or mentioned by the analysts. Not once did they mention the 15 straight losses. Not once did they mention Kuz and Poole disappearing later, Deni Avdija turning it over 5 times, or Bilal struggling, or any type of analysis on the loss. All they did was talk about the positives. Who are we fooling here? Are we fooling 8-year-old Johnny from Bethesda, Maryland, that because he you don't tell him that the Wizards are 9-52 at the time, that he's gonna think they're fucking 52-9? No. Well, it's gross. And we all know that the analysts are getting paid. Like, I want to mention that. I know a lot of people that work at Monumental, and I feel badly saying all of this stuff because they do a great job. They're great analysts. They truly do have great things to say and things that I'd like to hear on the post game if it were unfiltered. We all know where the problem lies. We all know the guy up top, Ted Leonsis, is coming from the top and telling these guys, do not mention the record, do not say anything bad about the team, just talk about the positives. We don't want anybody thinking this team is worse than it is. Guess what, Ted? You're not fucking stupid. Neither is anybody else watching this team. You ask anybody how bad the Wizards are, they tell you they're the worst team in the league. And you don't have to tell them that on the post-game show to know. You're not going to talk about the record. Guess what? I can go on Bleacher Report and in 2 seconds figure out that your team is the worst in the league. But because you don't talk about it on your little post-game show, I'm not going to know. It's ridiculous. And I hate the fact that this is going on. The worst thing to have in sports, honestly, is a terrible owner. I experienced that as a Commanders fan for the last, 20 years, having Dan Snyder as my owner. And now that Dan's gone, this guy, Ted, is kind of getting exposed. If you just saw his plan for the stadium, basically done. It's dead, I think. Got no traction in terms of Congress, and it's going nowhere. So now, not only did he anger half the fan base with the potential move, but he's not even moving. They're going to stay in D.C. It's just L after L after L, and the propaganda that he's pushing, is just the icing on the cake. And Like I said before, I didn't want to talk about it because I like so many of the people that work for Monumental. They are really good at their jobs, and I feel like me saying this it could be taken the wrong way, and I'm sorry if you take it that way. But look, I have to, as somebody who has kind of a voice in this Wizards community, I have to stretch tr I have to stress it somewhere, and I'm gonna do it here on this podcast. I'm gonna talk about how ridiculous the propaganda is, and I'm not the only person. I'm sure all of you guys listening, if you watch the post game or pregame show or the coverage overall of the team, you would know that it's propaganda, honestly, and it's skewed and it's biased and it's just not good. And I don't know why they think people would like that. Nobody enjoys being told complete nonsense. It's getting to the point where I just kind of had to speak on it. So, sad to say that about Monumental. But look, at the end of the day, it's a 16-game losing streak. You got the Hornets coming up next. The Hornets are pretty bad. It's not like the Wizards should 100% win this game, but if they lose it's looking, more and more possible that game against the Pistons is to break the losing streak, because this team is so. They're just unbelievably bad. Yeah, so that's my little spiel about Monumental. But look, as we move into the latter part of the season, nobody really gives a fuck anymore about, wins and losses. Obviously, you want to break this streak, like I said, but the Wizards are so far down that it's just kind of, let's get to the end. Let's be in that top three. And let's get to the draft lottery, because that's the goal of this season, is to be bad and to get lucky in the lottery. And if you look at the standings right now, the Wizards sit at 9-53, the Pistons at 9-52. So they got a half game lead, but obviously, if the teams are tied, I'm pretty sure Detroit holds the tiebreak just because the Wizards are 2-1 against them this season. I don't really know how that works. I'll have to look at Tankathon for that. My apologies, but I actually think it's a coin flip, if I'm being honest. I think it's a coin flip for that. But the Spurs, 13 wins. Hornets, 15 wins. Blazers, 17 wins. The Wizards aren't even going to win 13 games. They might not win 10, 11, or 12 games. They might be stuck at 9 for the whole season. So look, they're going to be in that top three, which is nice. That gives them a 14% chance, the best possible chance they can have at the number one overall pick. But being in that one spot also kind of solidifies the fact that they won't move outside the top five. And as you go down, if you have the second worst record, then you can't be below six. If you have the third worst record, you can't drop below seven. So it just kind of gives you a little, caution, or a little, better of a fallback option if you don't get too lucky. Because obviously the fifth pick isn't that bad. And in a draft class that, isn't that great, and where people think that the first pick and the fifth pick are kind of even, it's not the end of the world. But obviously, getting that first pick, it gives you so many more options. You can take the guy that you want instead of having to, have the board fall your way. So obviously, being as bad as you can be, it does benefit you. But I just basically my point here is that the Wizards are so bad that, don't get too pent up if they win a game. If they beat Charlotte, it's not going to move the tide too much. I'm sure the Pistons will win at least one game throughout the rest of the season. I don't think they're going to lose 24 straight to end the year. They also got to play us at least one more time. So, look, even if you're the second worst team, not the end of the world either. Just don't beat the Pistons' losing streak. Don't be the laughing stock of the league. We've been the laughing stock for too long. Let the Pistons be that laughing stock. Don't repeat that run. Also, I want to talk about Bilal for a second. Obviously hasn't been as good as he was in the beginning of the season. And I'd probably attribute that to that rookie wall. Obviously, he was playing on the U, I think the U18 team in France for a while with Wemby. It was Wemby's team up top, and then Bilal was kind of that like B team but below it. And then only late in the season, when they had a couple injuries, did Bilal get called up there, and then Bilal started making an impact, and then Bilal was starting for them, playing playoff games. So you got to think, a year ago this guy wasn't even on the main team for France, for the French league, and now you got him starting against the NBA guys. He's not ready yet, and we knew that going into the season. So when he came in making threes and shooting 40+% from three for the first half of the season, playing unbelievable defense. That is why everyone was freaking out because he's not supposed to be this good yet. It's going to take time. And I think it's kind of been a reality check for not only Bilal, but for the fan base to kind of bring him back to earth with these last couple of weeks of games where Bilal has, he's not bad. Look, the defense is consistent throughout. He's always playing great D. The offensive production, the kind of turnovers, the wild shots at the rim. We've seen a little more of that in the latter half of the season than we did in the beginning. And I think that's, he's playing a lot of games, probably the most basketball he's played in his life. His body is probably not used to it. And I'm teams are, obviously they have film on him now. They're getting used to, his tendencies. It's just a bunch of things. And look, I'm not going to panic. I think obviously going in, we knew Bilal would be a 3-4 year project. He's not going to be there right away, but I'm unbelievably intrigued from what I've seen this season. He could not play a game the rest of the year, and I think this is a successful rookie campaign. For a guy that I didn't think could shoot threes this well, is pretty solid 3-point shooter at this level. Incredible athleticism. You saw before he injured himself, almost dunked over a guy from the free throw line. Pretty impressive. Defense is phenomenal. Could argue that maybe behind Denny, he's the best defender on this team already, and not difficult. This team has horrible defense across the board, pretty much. But nonetheless, to come in as an 18-year-old prospect on an NBA team and be the best defender, pretty much, is not an easy feat. It's impressive. And so, look, I'm not going to panic. I do understand the people coming out and saying, why is nobody talking about this rookie wall from Bilal? And look, we do have to talk about it. He hasn't been good as of late, but that does not shake my confidence whatsoever. This guy was never supposed to come in and tear it up from the beginning. He was always supposed to be a project. That's what he is. And look, you got to just stay the course. You got to look for the little positives in the games. And being this bad, no pressure on the team whatsoever. Not only should it allow him to get minutes to improve, but it should also allow him to kind of play freely and just kind of experiment with things. Not necessarily have, someone looking over his shoulder every time he misses a shot because, oh no, you missed a three. No, we're gonna fall to 9-54 instead of, 10-53. How could that happen? Like, nobody cares anymore. These losses mean nothing to me. I've watched 16 straight games of the Wizards. I haven't felt what it feels like to win a game since January. It's March 7th. And I feel the same way I felt after we lost game one to Indiana on opening night. I feel the same. The losses mean nothing to me. I'm immune to them, and I'm sure as Wizards fans you are as well. They go right through me. I don't even feel it because this is the way it's felt all season. There's no energy or juice in watching this team. There's honestly no joy, and I hate saying that. As I mean, if you followed me for ever since I started doing this Wizards content stuff, I've tried to milk out every last positive from this team, all the joy that it could give me. I have felt no joy for most of the season. I hate saying that, but it's true. I dread loading up the NBA app to watch Wizards games. I dread the fact that when we're up 20 points, I know, the lead will be blown. I know when it's, close games in the fourth, it's going to be going to Poole and Kuz. They're going to take terrible contested threes. They're going to, shoot the Wizards out of the game. It's all these things that aren't new to me, and that's why I'm numb to it. These losses are nothing. Fucking lose the last 36 games of the season, and I wouldn't flinch. I wouldn't. It would just be like, okay, yeah, this team is terrible. What are you gonna do about it? So, look, that's gonna do it for this episode. We discussed multiple topics, kind of, all over the place. I talked about Jordan Poole playing very well this season off the bench. I also talked about, Kuz and Poole both kind of, crumbling late under pressure when it matters most. Not, because they're not number one options yet. They're not there yet, but they think they are, and that's kind of how they're shooting the Wizards out of these games. I talked about RJ Hampton and Champagne as well. I'd like to see them get some NBA run. You got to stop with the Poole and Jones backcourt. It's absolutely terrible. Hasn't worked all season, so why is it going to work now? Monumental propaganda. I went on probably like a 5-10 minute, rant on that. So if you want to re-listen to it, go back. But look, the Wizards are 9-53 at the time I'm recording this. They've lost 16 straight games.
This has just been a disaster of a season. In terms of losing, obviously this has gone, flawlessly in terms of the tank. Will Dawkins, Michael Wenger, I'm sure are very happy with how it's going. They're losing so many games. Bilal is playing good minutes. Denny has, really made them look good with that contract extension. Corey looks like a guy who could be extension eligible. There's all these different things that go into it. Disastrous in terms of they are like historically terrible. But this is the way it's supposed to go when you're tanking. So I'd much rather, and I say this every episode to rationalize it, and hopefully this helps you as well. I'd much rather be the Wizards at 9-53 on a 16-game losing streak and the worst team in the league than the Atlanta Hawks, who are pretty much all in, and they are 28-34. Trae Young's out another 2 to 3 weeks. They're 19 games back of the best record. They are the 11. If you look at the East, they are the 10 seed. Basically 6.5 back of the 8. So they're in the play-in. They're not going anywhere. And they've given up first round picks to be here. I'd much rather be the Wizards than be the Hawks. I'd much rather be the Wizards than the Raptors, than the Nets. Honestly, than the Sixers, than the Pacers. Like, none of these teams are going anywhere, and they're kind of all in. They really, this is their some of their best teams, and they're not going to do anything about it. So I would rationalize it by saying I'd much rather be in the Wizards spot, trying to at least build the right way for the future, as opposed to kind of cheating the system, trying to shortcut it with some of these trades. So look, if you want to rationalize it, that's my rationalization. Not much to rationalize when your team is 9-53, has lost 16 straight. But that's my best effort. Again, appreciate all for listening. Sorry for the lack of uploads. I got my wisdom teeth out, so couldn't really do much in terms of speaking for the last couple of days. But yeah, that's gonna do it for this episode. Hopefully, the next time I record, I'm not talking about how the Wizards are on a 19-game losing streak. Hopefully, I'm talking about how they beat the Hornets and then they started a new 2-game losing streak. So, again, appreciate y'all for listening. That's gonna do it for this episode. And yeah, go Wiz.